Hi, you are listening to the message from Faith Bible Church's Sunday morning worship service. Thanks for joining us.
It is difficult to change what one has been doing for so long. It is. It's difficult to change what you've been doing for so long. And so when we get into the book of 1 Kings, you know, the entire book is really about people, you know, God wanting people to change. He wants them to turn back to God. And I think so far in the book, it shows two major things up till now, and it will continue to show this, that number one, that God is a God of incredible patience and determination. You know, he wants the people to do the right thing, which is to follow him, to turn their hearts toward him. And the second thing that comes out of all of this is just how fickle people are. God does all these things to try to get the people to turn. He gives them all these warnings, but they just don't seem interested at all. And I do think God does get the attention of some people. I mean, as we read, he does, but it just never sticks. And the people are just so drawn to follow idols rather than God. And let's be clear, this is not something that happened overnight. You know, for most of their lives, the people have been exposed to idols, to false gods, to this culture of false gods, for some of them, perhaps all their lives. So it's natural for people to sort of be drawn toward what they are most familiar with. And I've said it before, that if you've been raised in a family of a different religion, there is always going to be some pull in that direction. And even if you've become a Christian since that time, it's still natural to do things and to think things and to believe things that are reminiscent of your earlier faith in something else. It's just really natural. And I don't say that to excuse, you know, following these idols or these other religious practices, because it's not right. It's not good in God's eyes. It's not what he desires. I say this only to give us a sense of how difficult it is sometimes for some people to pull away from their past sense of what they've been used to and move toward God. But it has to be done. It has to. And for some of us, we have been brought up in a way that, you know, we just have to tear off the bandage and just choose and make that decision to follow God with all our being. And that can be hard, and that can be painful. And that's where we're at in chapter 18 of 1 Kings. And this is a very well-known, you've already heard some of the story about it. I suspect most of you already kind of know this story. It's a great story. It's a great story for even for the children to hear. I said earlier that God is always trying to get people to turn back to him. And here in chapter 18, he goes about as far as he can to get the people to turn to him. And so God goes head to head against these so-called idol gods to show the people that he alone is the one true God. And here we're going to see how God displays himself to the people. And he does something that is very rare, actually, in the course of history. He shows his power right before their very eyes. And we read the scriptures and we think, oh, this happens all the time. This does not happen often. But this is how far the people have moved away from God. And he comes really right before their eyes, shows their power. And all of this is done to turn the people's hearts back to God. And perhaps you are someone who feels like your heart for God isn't all there. It's drawn to the past life. It's drawn to the world. It's just not where it should be, and you know it, and you know it. You sense that. And perhaps you don't even realize that your heart isn't even turned toward God. Perhaps you don't realize how far you've drifted from him. Or perhaps you are someone searching for the one true God, but you don't know where to look. Well, God wants more than anything for us to have hearts that love him and are yielded to him. He wants to reveal himself to us. And today I want you to think about this. Where is your heart today? Where is your heart with God today? The first message in this series talked about Solomon and his divided heart. Remember that, for those who are here? And this continues to be an issue for the people. And it continues to be an issue for all of us, I think. Where is your heart? And how can you get it back to where it should be with God? That's where we're going to go with this chapter today. I'm going to read this story beginning in verse 16 of chapter 18. Thank you, Kenji, for obliging me in this. Could probably cut 10 minutes off our message if you just told the story, but we're going to read it. So Obadiah went to meet Ahab and told him. Of course, Ahab is the king. And Ahab went to Elijah. When he saw Elijah, he said to him, "Is that you, you troubler of Israel?" "I have not made trouble for Israel," Elijah replied, "but you and your father's family have. You have abandoned the Lord's commands and have followed the Baals. Now summon the people from all over Israel to meet me on Mount Carmel and bring the 450 prophets of Baal and the 400 prophets of Asherah who eat at Jezebel's table." So Ahab sent word throughout all Israel and assembled the prophets on Mount Carmel. Elijah went before the people and said, "How long will you waver between two opinions? If the Lord is God, follow him. But if Baal is God, follow him." But the people said nothing. Then Elijah said to them, "I am the only one of the Lord's prophets left, but Baal has 450 prophets. It's me against 450. God, get two bowls for us. Let Baal's prophets choose one for themselves and let them cut it into pieces and put it on the wood, but not set it free. But not set fire to it. I will prepare the other bowl and put it on the wood, but not set fire to it. Then you will call on the name of your God, and I will call on the name of the Lord, the God who answers by fire. He is God." Then all the people said, "What you say is good. Let's do it." Elijah said to the prophets of Baal, "Choose one of the bowls and prepare it first, since there are many of you. Call on the name of your God, but do not light the fire." So they took the bowl given them and prepared it. Then they called on the name of Baal from morning till noon. "Baal, answer us," they shouted, but there was no response. No one answered. And they danced around the altar they had made. At noon, Elijah began to taunt them. "Shout louder," he said. "Surely he is God. Perhaps he is deep in thought, or busy, or traveling. Maybe he is sleeping and he must be awakened." So they shouted louder and slashed themselves with swords and spears, as was their custom, until their blood flowed. Midday passed, and they continued their frantic prophesying until the time of the evening sacrifice. But there was no response. No one answered. No one paid attention. Then Elijah said to all the people, "Come here to me." They came to him, and he repaired the altar of the Lord, which had been torn down. Elijah took 12 stones, one for each of the tribes descended from Jacob, to whom the word of the Lord had come, saying, "Your name shall be Israel." With the stones he built an altar in the name of the Lord, and he dug a trench around it, large enough to hold two seahs of seed. He arranged the wood, cut the bowl into pieces, and laid it on the wood. Then he said to them, "Fill four large jars with water and pour it on the offering and on the wood." "Do it again," he said, and they did it again. "Do it a third time," he ordered, and they did it the third time. The water ran down around the altar and even filled the trench. At the time of sacrifice, the prophet Elijah stepped forward and prayed, "Lord, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Israel, let it be known today that you are God in Israel and that I am your servant and have done all these things at your command. Answer me, Lord, answer me, so these people will know that you, Lord, are God and that you are turning their hearts back again." Then the fire of the Lord fell and burned up the sacrifice, the wood, the stones, and the soil, and also licked up the water in the trench. When all the people saw this, they fell prostrate and cried, "The Lord, he is God, the Lord, he is God." Then Elijah commanded them, "Seize the prophets of Baal. Don't let anyone get away." They seized them, and Elijah had them brought down to the Kishon Valley and slaughtered them there. It's a great story. Great story. It's one of those stories that kind of plays out like a blowout football game. Yesterday's game was kind of a blowout, wasn't it? It was an eternal game. We left at halftime. It was just so long. The prophets of Baal, you know, they didn't stand a chance against God. And the first thing that Elijah does is he gets the people together along with the hundreds of false prophets. And before he does anything, he puts this challenge before them. He says, How long will you waver between two opinions? If the Lord is God, follow him. But if Baal is God, follow him. And when it comes to turning back to God, we have to make a choice, right? We have to make a choice. And for many people, they waver back and forth between God and idols. And when I say idols, I don't mean like statues and altars. I mean anything. Anything that rises above God is an idol. And so if we really want to turn back to God, we need to stop wavering. You want to turn back to God? Stop wavering and choose God. And at some point, you just have to choose God. And a lot of people, they sit in the middle, vacillating between God and whatever seems better at the moment. And ultimately, sitting in the middle, what's it do? It just leads to paralysis. Look how the people responded to Elijah's challenge. The passage says they just stood there in silence. Kind of reminds me of Jesus' words when he says these, no one can serve two masters. Either you will hate the one and love the other, or you will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money. We can't serve two masters. So what Elijah is basically telling the people is, look, make a choice. Stop pretending that it's okay to be in the middle. That kind of life, it doesn't lead to true life. The Apostle James wrote these words, you're familiar, but when you ask him that he's God, be sure that your faith is in God alone. Do not waver. For a person who with divided loyalty is as unsettled as a wave of the sea that is blown and tossed by the wind. Such people should not expect to receive anything from the Lord. Their loyalty is divided between God and the world, and they are unstable in everything they do. That kind of life that wavers back and forth, it's an unstable life. And without some kind of anchor, we're just thrown all over the place. I was reading the testimony about a woman, this person who decided to take God seriously and make her faith in God the highest priority for her. And she said from the outside, things didn't look that different. But on the inside, everything was different. She was calmer, more peaceful as she trusted God for her future. You know what a camera gimbal is? A camera gimbal, it's this contraption that you attach your camera to. And it's designed to create smooth videos as you kind of walk around. So if you're running around or something, the video is not kind of shaking. The gimbal makes it steady. Let me just give you an example here. I mean, it's a very simple illustration here, but life without God is like a life without a gimbal on a video camera. It's unstable. You know, it's controlled by its environment. It's a life that is controlled by things that are constantly changing. And it's simply not the kind of life that God has created for us. And if we want a stable life, we have to stop wavering in our devotion to God. You know, when a deer, you know the story, when a deer standing in the middle of the road at night and you're driving toward it, that phrase, you know, deer in the headlights, you know that. Why is that? Because a deer, when it sees the headlights, it just stands there, right? And it could go left, it could go right, but it stands in the middle where it's most likely to get hit. And that's what wavering between God and the world or idols or anything else, that's what standing in the middle does. And God says, come to me before you get hit. Why is it so hard for us to go all in for God? Why do we waver between God and other things? And there are a lot of reasons. But one big reason, I think, is because of this thing called worry. We become anxious just waiting for God to do something. We feel like something has to be happening, and it has to be happening right now in order for us to feel like something is actually happening. But sometimes, you know, God, he works in mysterious ways. His timing isn't our timing, right? And in the waiting, we just don't like it. We don't like our needs when our needs aren't being met right now. So what do? We take matters into our own hands. And somehow we have come to believe that we can have it both ways. We can have God, and we can choose to do it our own way and follow the world. But Elijah challenges us, how long will you waver between God and idols? So what does Elijah do? People don't know what to do. He sets up a match, basically, a match between Baal and the one true God, Yahweh. And what happens? And you've read what happens. The prophet calls upon their God. They're given all day to show him, to have him show up. They plead with him by, you know, cutting themselves and dancing and shouting louder. But there's nothing. There's no response, only silence. And that leads to what must happen next in order to turn our hearts to God. We have to stop trusting what can never deliver. And I think it's not until we see that the things that we're putting our trust in the world, they will never meet our deepest needs. It's not until we believe that we can start trusting God. The people of Israel, you know, they were able to see for themselves just how impotent this idol was. There was no real power made up in this God. I mean, sure, there were some things that would happen around them that they would attribute to God, or to this idol, I should say. And supposedly, you know, Baal, you know, he has this power to control storms and rain. And yet, they've been in a drought for a couple of years. 3.5, actually. And somehow that wasn't enough to douse their belief in him. No pun intended. The fact that he couldn't also produce a lightning storm to set the altar on fire, you know, that should have convinced them that their idols were powerless. But I will say it again, it's a difficult challenge. It's difficult to stop trusting in the things that we've trusted in for so long. In fact, sometimes we double down on the idea, right? Something we often hear, and it's often true, it's this idea that perseverance pays off, right? If something isn't delivering, then what do? We've learned to work harder, to stick with it, and in time it will pay off. And so even though the signs tell us that the things that we're trusting in aren't delivering, we just think we need to trust in them just a little bit longer and work just a little bit harder. And like those prophets of Baal, you know, we figuratively, we cut ourselves, we shout a little louder, we move a little more frantically with the hope that things will pan out. You know what? They don't. And honestly, they won't over the long haul. How much do we have to sacrifice before we realize that the things of this world can't meet our real needs? I'm getting signs in the back. I don't know what to tell you. We'll see what happens. But listen, no amount of money, no amount of hard work or networking or success or fame, none of that. None of that is going to deliver what only God can deliver on. I read an article recently. It was referenced in, Stephen, one of your professors at seminary over at Western. He referenced this article, and this is what the article says in part. A recent Wall Street Journal article stopped me cold, titled, "Work-Life Balance Will Keep You Mediocre." In other words, seeking to have a work-life balance is going to make you a mediocre person. It featured a young college student who claimed to have found the secret formula for success. Eliminate balance now, optimize ruthlessly, and buy freedom later. The student says, "I eliminated work-life balance entirely and just worked," he wrote. "When you front-load success early, you buy the luxury of choice for the rest of your life." And he went on to describe a path of self-inflicted hardship, sleep deprivation, social isolation, physical decline, all in the pursuit of wealth. The ultimate goal? To become a billionaire by 30, then use that fortune to fix global problems like climate change and inequality. In other words, sacrifice what is good now to gain wealth, which will give you more of what you sacrificed later. He continues on this fallacy of this mindset. He says, it's the lesson of King Midas, whose golden touch granted his wish, but cost him everything that made life worth living. If you don't know the story of King Midas, anything he touched turned to gold. That's what his wish was. Unfortunately, food. He couldn't eat food because he turned to gold every time he touched it. His daughter turned to gold. It's a lesson King Midas, whose golden touch granted his wish but cost him everything that made life worth living. Or it is the story of the entrepreneur who wakes up one day with a successful business but no joy, no relationships, and no health left to enjoy it. The Wall Street Journal student believes his sacrifices now will earn him decades of choice later. But history, psychology, and faith all tell the same story. That deal never works. The more you pursue wealth to get a vague sense of freedom later, the more you will serve wealth as a master who demands that we sacrifice our relationships to get it. And as we do this, we will change as a person. And we will change not to be the person that we really want to be. This is a picture of someone who wants to control the outcome. But in the process of trying to control it, he leaves God out of everything. And he leaves everything that is most important to God out of his life. And in the end, he loses. He loses out on everything at the beginning by working so hard, and he loses out on everything at the end because he will have isolated himself from everyone and everything in the process. And at some point, like these prophets of Baal, we have to see that idols cannot deliver. We cannot control our outcomes. And there are many ways that we trust other things than God. And all that to say, if we want to have a heart for God, if we want to turn our hearts back to him, we need to stop wavering in our commitment to God, and we need to stop trusting the things that can never deliver. And then lastly, if you want to turn your hearts back to God, you need to start putting your life on the altar. We read, you know, that the prophets of Baal, they were unsuccessful. But the first thing that Elijah does, what does he do? He rebuilds the altar that was previously torn down. We read in verse 30 these words. They came to him and he repaired the altar of the Lord, which had been torn down, in verse 38. Then the fire of the Lord fell and burned up the sacrifice, the wood, the stones, and the soil, and also licked up the water in the trench. When all the people saw this, they fell prostrate and cried, "The Lord, he is God. The Lord, he is God." So it's on this altar that he places the offering and allows God to do his powerful work. And I know that this is not meant to be an allegorical story. It's a real event that took place at that time. But it parallels, I think, this idea that if we want to get right with God, we need to rebuild the altar and offer our lives to God on it. And the first thing we see in this account is this clear demonstration that God's work is his work. It's his work. It's not something that we can do ourselves. Elijah does all these things to make it absolutely clear that it is not a fluke, it's not a trick, that God's going to be the one, when you see this, he's going to be the one who is front and center here. It has nothing to do with Elijah. Elijah digs a trough around the altar and he fills it with seed, and then he puts wood on the altar and he pours 12 large jars of water over it to saturate the wood. To make sure it's thoroughly soaked. And again, that makes it what? Very difficult to burn. And the water drains down into the trough, but the water isn't soaked into the ground. It is absorbed by the seeds. making certain that the altar was as wet as possible, making it as difficult to burn as possible. And if we're going to turn back to God, we have to give it all to Him on the altar. Give Him the things that seem impossible to burn. The struggles that you have that you just can't get through, put it on the altar. The dreams that you just can't achieve, put it on the altar. The pain and the shame of your past, put it on the altar. Because God can take what appears to be impossible to burn, and He can reveal His power through it. But we have to surrender it to God. What is the thing in your life that seems impossible to burn down? What is it? God says, give it to Him. Give it to Him. Because if there's anything you've probably learned, it's that you can't do it without God. Turning our hearts toward Him means surrendering our lives to Him. And that's when God can start to do the things in our lives that show His power. Are we willing to trust God's plans? Are we willing to trust that they are better than our own? Are we willing to give up control and trust God? I was reading one woman's story that it might resonate with you. She writes these words. Early this year, I was having a challenge with one of the programs my children participated in, and I was furious. Now, I'm not a fighter, but I will write a very strongly worded letter, and that was exactly what I planned to do. I was going to go all the way to the top, and I would let everyone know what was wrong and what needed to be fixed. But as I took a walk to calm down before writing this strongly worded letter, the Lord started to minister to me to get to the real root of my frustration. The truth was, as mad and angry as I was, I really felt powerless. I honestly felt there was nothing I could do or say that would matter, and that made me feel weak. I prayed about the matter, still feeling helpless, and when I got home and was about to set up my computer to write my letter, I checked my email to find that the problem had been solved without one word from me. God had already gone before me and took care of it. I don't need to fight or control or convince. I just needed to be patient enough to let God have His way. When we're in a situation that we don't like, or our first default response is usually to control matters ourselves, but this may leave little room for God to do what we can't. And I've learned that true power doesn't come from control, but from surrender. And so often we have been trained to get off the altar and do it ourselves. And if we would just trust God, especially with the things that we feel so helpless to control, that's when we can begin to see God do the work and the power in our lives. And we can begin to see God for who He really is. You know, the title of this series, it's called The God Who Still Reigns. But does He reign in your heart? Have you followed Him enough to see His power in your life? And it all begins by turning our hearts to Him. It means giving up this vacillating between God and the world. It means trusting in Him and not in the things of this world to deliver. And it means putting our lives on the altar of God and giving up control of everything in our lives. And if you will do that, God promises to take us on the greatest adventure of our lives. He will. And sometimes it will be scary. And sometimes it will be the most fun thing you've ever done. But one thing is absolutely certain. Max Lucado writes these words: God never said the journey would be easy, but He did say the arrival would be worthwhile. Won't you follow Him? Won't you turn your hearts to Him?
Follow me. This is an invitation to change and let go. It's finding and losing and leaving the heavy things to me. I'm not just an option for life, I am life. It's shedding old identities, bad habits, and harmful ways, Lay down your burdens. Pick up my mantle. Cast off your ways, your wants, and your pride. Come follow me. Let the old things die. I'm doing a new thing. Learn my ways. Imitate my life. Trust me. Obey me. Give me all your idols and the empty things that you love. Trade your safety and slumber for breakthrough and new frontiers. I'm going to the orphans, the prisoners, the widows, and the sick. Come with me. I am the light that shines in dark places. Let me shine through you. This is my kingdom. This is my way. Follow me.